A surprised shout resounded in Leowyn's mind a moment later, nearly causing her to fall to the ground. The voice was unmistakably her mother's, yet she could also feel it as the voice of the goddess.
That's not funny,
Leowyn muttered in disbelief as she regained her balance, looking to her mother. Had she done something to interfere with her daughter's thoughts?
Did not,
Rhiannon shouted out defensively.
This is why I wanted to move so far away from town. I knew you'd never believe me that easily,
she grumbled slightly.
Leowyn was just about to protest when her mother's eyes became dull, her body relaxing as if she had suddenly fallen into a sleep. She was just about to rush forward in a panic to help her steady herself when she found her body unable to move, a strange mite pressing down on her from all sides. Gradually, a golden light descended from above, another woman appearing within the light next to Rhiannon.
Goddess, Leowyn said in shock. How could she not recognize the woman whose statue was erected just outside of town? Even without that, anyone would recognize her at a glance, just because of who she was.
Please, forgive her. She didn't mean anything by it.
Leowyn's mind was racing, fearing that Rhiannon had descended due to her prayer and Renan's previous outburst. She didn't want the goddess to take away her mother, and could only plead for lenience. However, the goddess suddenly had a petulant expression as she looked at Leowyn.
How many times do I have to say I'm not crazy?
What? Leowyn's eyes opened wide in shock as she heard those words, slowly moving her eyes back towards Rhiannon and then to the goddess again. She could understand the prayer being faked with her mother's mastery over magic, but to fake the presence of Rhiannon herself should be well beyond anything she was capable of.
But how?
Rhiannon sighed gently, the pressure on Leowyn's body lessening greatly.
I really didn't want to tell you this way, my daughter. I had hoped you could live a fairly normal life.
As she spoke, she seemed to superimpose herself over Rhiannon, who gradually seemed to wake up again.
However, your father seemed insistent that I tell you about us.
Leowyn was still struggling to understand what was going on. Yet the mention of her father caused a change in her. She seemed to almost become more obedient at the mention of him, wanting to know more.
Okay, please, explain, she said softly, moving to sit next to her mother.
Why, now?
Rhiannon chuckled lightly.
First, let me tell you something. After that, he wanted me to deliver a question to you. There are things you don't know, things that nobody knows yet.
Seeing her daughter nod gently, Rhiannon began speaking again.
You have seen the winged spirits, my angels?
Of course,
Leowyn answered. It had taken a few years after she began practicing the ability to see spirits, but she had eventually seen those winged spirits descending and leading others to Rhiannon's embrace. They were an iconic figure within the church, but due to nobody having conversed with them, little was known about what they were.
Well, those aren't really my angels at all,
Rhiannon shrugged as she spoke.
They work for someone else, to lead the departed into a pleasant afterlife. Normally, you'd find out about that when it's your turn, but your father wanted me to tell you early.
Why?
She couldn't help but ask again. Even though she knew her mother was the goddess now, she didn't feel at all like she did around her father. She had known her mother from birth, so she did not feel nervous talking to her like this. If anything, she was more upset that she didn't hear about this sooner.
Because I won't be going there.
Rhiannon shook her head, reaching out one lightly glowing arm to pull her daughter close.
This body, Rhiannon, is an incarnation of my power. When she dies, her spirit will simply return to me. I won't be able to wait for you beyond, and can only watch over you from above.
Her words struck Leowyn's heart, making her feel a twinge of panic. She recalled how years ago she had spoken to her father about her mother's inevitable death, and knew that these two conversations had to be linked.
Then, he won't be there either?
Rhiannon shook her head again.
No, he watches the world from a much higher place. That's why he asked me to deliver a question to you. He wants you to think about it, and give him the answer yourself when the time comes.
After saying that, Rhiannon turned her head to look fully at her daughter. His question was, Will you be my Seppo? Will you give up your future possibilities to stay by my side and the side of your mother? When the time comes, I will appear before you again and ask this question. Leowen, please think carefully.
I'm not entirely sure what he means by Seppo, but I can guess from the rest, Renan continued after delivering the message. I'll tell you whatever you want to know to help you make your decision, but you have to promise not to let the information spread. People just aren't ready to know about everything yet.
Leowen's mind shook as she heard the question, enough that she barely registered what her mother said next. She dumbly nodded her head, still trying to process the information. Naturally, she wanted nothing more than to be able to stay with her mother and father, but given the words he used, she would truly have to learn everything she could to make the proper decision.
Chapter 32. I let out a long sigh as I watched Leowen and Rian gradually walking back towards the town. I had the feeling I'd know what her answer was going to be, but there was no way I'd push her to answer early. No, she'd live a full life first. That way she'd have plenty of time to have her own experiences and the chance to make new connections. Though there was one thing I needed to test out first. Closing my eyes, I sent my thoughts towards the sleeping lion soul within me. I could still distinctly feel its presence, even in the admin room, which was why I considered making her this offer in an attempt to let her spend more time with Rian and myself. However, it was still important to know if we could bring her out of my body. Focusing, I urged the lion spirit to leave my body, summoning it out into the room around me. A fierce roar echoed in the room, a bright light forming in front of my chest as the spirit seemed to jump directly out of it. Strangely, it did not look at all incorporeal, as it would in the mortal world. Instead, it looked just as lifelike as it did the day I fought it. Okay, it died that day, so let's say the day before I fought it. Terra, I mentally called for her, deciding this as good a time as any to practice my mental communication skills. Thankfully, I received a response shortly, so I at least did not dial the wrong goddess this time. I thought that the only beings allowed in the admin room were the Keeper and any purchased companions. This was something that she had told me long ago, hence why I was performing this test in the first place. However, soon the answer to my question came to me.
That's right. Guessing you brought out your spirit beast, if you were asking, so let me explain. A spirit bound to you is still considered a part of you. The connection is far stronger than something like a hunter's pet or a tamer's monster. If you die, it dies, and it can only manifest with your power.
And the reason it doesn't look like a ghost anymore? I had a feeling I knew the answer to this one, but I wanted to ask just in case.
That part's easy. Remember, up here the energy at our disposal is limitless. The quality of the body your spirit possesses is based on the amount and density of the spiritual energy used to form it. Therefore, when you summon it up here, it appears in a perfect body. Hearing that, I honestly couldn't hold back another question.
Okay, but wouldn't that mean I could just cheat and have it drink in the spiritual energy so that it is stronger when I descend later? I could faintly hear a laugh over the connection.
No, a bound spirit can't consume the energies of the administration room. If you tried to force it to, the spirit would likely be destroyed by the overwhelming energy.
Okay, so note to self, don't do that. All right. Thanks. Anything in particular that I should pay attention to, now that I'm talking with you? Figured it'd be good to see if there was anything interesting going on that would be good for me to look at.
A few people are making some advances. Aha! Here's a nice spot for you. I'm putting it on your monitor now.
Charn Presley stood at the helm of one of the many ships that sailed the wide blue ocean. His journey was a long one, having already been over a week since they saw land. With him were a dozen ships, each carrying a dozen human men and women. He treated these people as if they were his family, and many of them were, indeed. They had not been cast out from the kingdoms, but rather chose to leave, to start their own life beyond the sea. They did not agree with many of the views of those self-righteous kingdoms, those who thought themselves as gods.
There was but one Lord in his heart, and she did not sit upon a mortal throne. As such, he and his kin and those who wished to join him had left, unsure of what they may find beyond the horizon. They brought with them enough food for a few more days, but after that they would have to rely on catching the fish that swam beneath their sails. It was not an impossible task, but Charn had already seen the fearsome might of the ocean beasts. Originally there had not been 12 but 15 ships as part of this voyage. Yet 3 days after their departure a great shadow appeared from beneath the water, a snake as long as a city, with a mouth that could swallow a castle's gates, appeared from the water. The beast was repulsive to behold, with scale and flesh dropping off its length as quickly as the waters that surrounded it. The creature had no intelligence within its gaze, and immediately rushed towards them, swallowing 3 ships in 3 strides. Through the holes in its flesh, he could see the broken wood and flailing bodies falling down its throat. Yet after it swallowed those ships, it seemed placated, and once more sank beneath the waves. It was not that they had no power to fight it. The clan of Presley was a clan of mighty warriors. Yet this was a creature which moved too fast, and with too much force for them to face. After it left, they could only pray to Behenna, as well as the spirits of the seas and skies, to watch over them for the rest of the journey. "Father, I see land!" the youngest child aboard Charn's ship called up from the front. His eyes had been ever focused forward. Despite his young age, none dared question his sight. He had begun training as a monk, and had long since learned how to enhance his sight far beyond normal means.
"Good, Elphys," Charn said with a laugh.
If his son could see land, then it was at most another 2 days away. If they could make it for 2 more days, then they could reach this new land. He let his voice build up in his throat, shouting out for his words to be carried to the nearby ships.
"We have land, men. The spirits have heard our call, and the goddess has blessed our travel."
After his voice echoed out, he could hear his words being repeated again, the message being spread beyond to all of the ships. Cheers could be heard from the weary men and women who longed to reach shore. These sailors moved with renewed vigor, knowing that their new home was just beyond the horizon. With fair winds and clear weather, Charn and his fleet arrived at an empty shore. This was no small island, and from the moment they saw it, they could not find its ends upon the horizon. From a single glance, it was clear that the place had never been touched by the hands of men. This was made even more obvious the moment their ships pulled in near the beach. Each one dropped a large stone tied to a rope, anchoring them in position. While it wouldn't protect them from the beasts beneath the waves, this would at least prevent them from drifting back to sea. From there, every man, woman, and child dove into the water, quickly finding themselves able to stand and run to shore. Before the eyes of every traveler, the spirits sent their message. "You are among the first group in history to successfully travel to a new land by way of sea. This is a grand achievement, earning all present the title of Beyond the Seas. While at sea, beast and monsters weaker than you will flee your presence, while those too weak to perceive it will be drawn to you." Charn couldn't help but laugh uproariously at the blessing that the spirits gave. Though some may see the last sentence as troublesome, those who traveled the waters knew the importance of keeping fish nearby. This deterrent would likely be ineffective against the great beast that had consumed their kinsmen, but against the more common threats it would suffice.
"Come, men," he shouted with a wide smile on his aged face, "let us build our new home."
It was at this point that the young boy who had originally spotted the island came up to him. He was eager to hunt for food and help with the construction. But first there was a question that must be asked.
"Father, shouldn't we name this place? The spirits have told us that we were here first, after all."
Though his child was young, his insights often stretched far beyond his years. Charn nodded his head in agreement with another laugh.
"All right, boy. Since you were first to see the island, you shall be the one to name it. Do not shame us after we have come all this way. I'm sure we'd hate to have to find a new land already." A few of the nearby kin laughed at his words.
The child took the task seriously, sinking into thought as he came up with the name. Then,
"We shall call it Rokindral."
He nodded his head, earning an approving smile from his father.
"A fine name. Now, go along. There's still work to be done," he shouted, causing his youngest son to immediately begin running into the forest,
where many had already disappeared to begin work. I couldn't help but chuckle dryly as I watched this scene. Tara was certainly right. The first people to settle on an island was worthy of a bit of attention. While it might seem small, that was only in comparison to the gigantic proportions of the continents. There would still be enough land for them to explore and cultivate for many generations to come. But first,
"Irina, can we talk for a moment?"
"Of course, Dale. What's the matter?" Her response came almost as soon as I had finished asking my question. "I saw a monster just now in the world below in the seas. It looked to be an undead creature. I thought your people were taking care to make sure that couldn't happen." Naturally, I had to ask that. The presence of undead horrors within the sea was likely more important than even the first settlers to a new land.
"Dale," her reluctant tone came through the connection, "my people cannot easily traverse the depths of the oceans, even if they had the numbers to do so. It is unfortunate, but until we find a race more suitable for that, there is nothing that I can do to stop the appearance of undead within the sea. Even me acting personally, I would not be able to harvest all of those souls more than once a year, and that is only assuming that they did not resist."
"It's all right, I'm not blaming you. I just wanted to clearly understand what's going on. I could see how difficult it was. If a spirit had to focus on maintaining their form with water constantly pushing through it, they'd hardly be able to use the same kind of battle tactics that they could on the surface. Not to mention that there are likely far more creatures beneath the seas than on land. If I gave someone a domain that controlled the ocean and its wildlife, would that make it easier to take care of those creatures?" I asked. "While there were no free domains waiting to be assigned, I could still purchase one for someone."
Perhaps. If I work together with them, then we should be able to take care of most of the spirits with our joint power."
Hearing that, I nodded my head, before reaching out to contact Behenna.
"Free for a moment?"
I was getting a lot of practice with this mental communication today, though I'd have to ask the goddesses for feedback later to make sure I wasn't broadcasting too loud or anything.
"As long as you meant to call me, and not someone else, sure."
Behenna's voice came back to me through the connection.
"What's up?"
"I want to give you a new domain. Your people were the first to cross the water and reach a new land, so I was thinking about giving you the ocean's domain. Of course, there are other reasons, too." At first, I could feel excitement coming through the link, but it was soon extinguished by a small grumbling tone.
"You want to push more work off onto me?"
"Irina's forces can't clean up the spirits in the water. She says that if she works with someone that has the appropriate domain, then the two of you should be able to take care of it."
"Then why don't you just give her the ocean's domain?" A somewhat frustrated tone responded to me, making me chuckle dryly.
"Well, I thought about it, but really wouldn't it make a little sense for the goddess of the underworld and justice, who no living being knows about, to receive this domain? It'd be more fitting for one of the living gods, with you being first on the list." I did my best to explain, feeling her reluctance gradually lessening as I did.
"All right, fine, I'll take the ocean's domain. At least it will give me something to worry about that isn't politics. I swear if you had come to me with another government-related domain, I probably would have driven my head through a wall." I felt a small grin forming on my face.
"So you don't want to be the goddess of nobility, then?" I teased lightly, hearing an almost furious scream from the connection at the mere thought of getting that title. With a laugh, I let go of the connection and brought up the market to buy the domain. Thankfully, the first non-free domain for a given god or goddess was only 20 points, so it wasn't much to worry about. With that small distraction out of the way, I once again began fast-forwarding, curious how my daughter would react to all of the information that was given to her.
My daughter?
The thought still felt a bit strange, given that she was almost 10 times as old as I was now. But it also made me feel good. In this world, I could say that she was the only person that was actually family, after all. Chapter 33. Leowen's decision was not an easy one. In fact, she wasn't really sure what she wanted when her mother asked her that question. Yes, of course, she wanted to spend the rest of her time with her mother and father, but she couldn't say that was all she wanted, not without knowing more. For the next few weeks after they got home, she began asking her mother any questions she could think of, asking both about the underworld and the world in which her father lived. Because her mother had been told to answer any of her questions, Leowen learned things which she knew nobody else in the world would know. She learned that the gods were people like them, just with vastly superior powers and lifespans. The wisdom of the gods was not some all-knowing power that permeated the world, but a wisdom built on age. And she even learned that there were far more races present in the world than just the elves. Fantastical races that she had never imagined, beings that seemed almost impossible for her to consider. This questioning lasted for roughly a month before she finally stopped asking any more. One reason was because she could not think of anything else she wanted to ask, and the other was because her mother seemed to have fallen ill. Her lively and energetic mother was bedridden, her face far paler than normal. The strangest thing about this disease was that the bar of life did not appear above her head as it normally did when someone fell ill. This was, however, a relief to Leowen, instead of cause for concern. If the bar of life failed to appear, it meant her life was not truly in danger. "What's wrong, Mother?" she asked, sitting beside her mother's bed and gently stroking her cheek with a wet rag. "With your abilities, surely you can heal yourself." Now that she knew her mother was a goddess, it was hard to associate her with the same mortal faults that others suffered. Renan, however, simply smiled. "My power does not cover healing. And I am not sure what exactly is wrong with me either." Her voice was weak as she spoke, almost tired. "Can you ask that other goddess, the one you said knows more than she speaks?" Leowen asked, her tone starting to grow worried. If even a goddess did not know what was wrong, then she could not entirely trust the bar of life. Renan nodded her head, closing her eyes. Leowen assumed that she was focusing on her divine self to ask the other goddess why she was feeling this way. From what she had learned, all of the gods had friendly relations with each other, so there was no reason that they wouldn't help. "Ah," her voice weakly spoke out after a few minutes. "Well, this is embarrassing." "Mother?" Leowen asked as she looked to Renan. "There is no illness." Renan slowly shook her head. "It seems I was mistaken when I showed myself before. A mortal body cannot hold my full power." A dry chuckle escaped her lips. Seeing her daughter starting to show a panicked expression, she smiled warmly. "Don't worry, this won't kill me. The energies within my body were thrown into disarray. Once I focus on fixing them for a while, I'll be fine." After saying that, a mischievous glint appeared in her eyes. "Though that does mean you'll have to cook for me. I might end up ill after all." "Mother!" Leowen shouted, feeling her ears turning red. It was true that she didn't know how to cook, but that wasn't her fault. In order to help with the issues of her body, her mother had never allowed her to learn the chef class. However, now she was at the pinnacle of power, or what her mother called the level limit. Even if she began cooking, she wouldn't earn the class. "I was teasing you, dear. I know you won't poison me." Though she said that, her mother still smiled playfully. If anything, she had become even more playful with Leowen after revealing her true self, no longer feeling like she had to pretend to be some poor, aging mother. "Well, you stay here, and I'll get you some soup," Leowen said, with a small sigh, moving down and preparing a breakfast for her mother. After that incident, Renan truly did recover to her normal condition after a few days. Yet Leowen still didn't come up with any more questions to ask. Naturally, she asked if there was anything else that she needed to know. But her mother didn't seem to come up with anything either. Instead, she planned to wait for the next chance that she could speak with her father instead. From the admin room, I watched as Leowyn went about her life, occasionally checking to see if there were other interesting developments happening throughout the world. I had to appreciate the irony when Elphys Presley, King of Rock'n'Roll, assumed the throne. Aside from that, I saw that the ninjas had finally begun spreading out beyond their first city, creating more ninja villages within the forest. I still had my conversations with Leowyn, though their subjects had changed somewhat. Instead of only telling me about how her year had been, she began asking me about my own life and the world I used to live in. At first I was surprised she even knew about that, but it seemed she really had been asking Renan anything she could think of. After the first 10 years, she probably knew more about the afterlife than I did myself, so she stopped asking questions about that. Instead, she focused more on getting to know me as a person. She had stopped seeing me just as some almighty entity, which was honestly a relief. Of course, I would still always end our conversations with a story, but now she knew where these stories came from. As the years passed, gradually Renan once again found herself weakening. This time, however, it was not due to her divine powers interfering with her body, but rather age itself. As she approached the end of her lifespan, her daughter was constantly with her, taking care of her in any way she could. To the surprise of both mother and daughter, there was even a messenger sent from the capital of Gandor. Word had spread that the mad enchanter was dying, so a scroll of parchment arrived from the queen herself. By the time it arrived, Renan was having problems reading properly, so she had asked her daughter to read it to her.
"Renan, my dear friend, I have heard of the hardships you face in these final hours, and offer my sincere apologies. I had not been aware of the schemes of the church regarding your daughter, but they have now been brought to my attention. I have not forgotten the services you have done for us, or the debts that have long been owed." Leowyn read the scroll, feeling her eyes water as she saw the contents. Even knowing that her mother was not truly dying, this was still an extremely sad event for her. "You have gone beyond your duty to help my people, as you did for my mother before me. For this, I offer you one final reward. May you meet the goddess happily, knowing your daughter is safe. I will welcome her into my court and offer her a position at my side. I shall always strive to do my best to protect her from those who seek to misuse her gifts. And though I cannot say that she will be able to change the way people see her, know that to me, she will always be the daughter of a dear friend." When Leowyn had finished reading the scroll, she rolled it back up and placed it beside her. Renan had a peaceful smile on her face as she heard the contents. "Finally, somewhere else you can be happy when I'm gone. Maybe you'll even be able to make new friends." Her voice was truly weak now, weaker than it had ever been.
"Don't worry, Mother,"
Leowyn spoke gently to her, clutching her hand as she sat next to her bed. "I'll take care of myself. Just wait for me, and I'll see you again someday."
Unlike most, when their loved ones were passing, Leowyn did not treat this as a true goodbye. To her, who knew the truth, she knew that she would have another chance to see her again. It would just take time. Renan nodded her head slowly.
"Then, until we meet again, my daughter," she spoke, her eyes slowly closing.
However, even as the last vestige of strength in her hand faded away, Leowyn heard her mother's voice within her head once more.
"Let me do one last thing to show those ignorant people not to mess with my daughter."
Unlike the voice of her dying mother, this one was filled with life and determination. Suddenly, a golden light descended from above, covering the entire city of Kalbunga. Those who saw this light immediately stopped what they were doing and stared into the sky. This had only ever happened once before, when the city was threatened with destruction. Now, once again, the illusory figure of the goddess descended. This time it was above a building in the middle of town, where the mad enchanter had lived. Nobody would ever be able to forget this day, when the goddess herself personally guided the soul of a mortal into her arms. From the gentle smile that could be easily seen on her face,
They knew that the soul she came to collect was one that she cared for deeply. Though many had seen her angels come to collect the souls of the fallen, the goddess herself had never made such an appearance. There were those who lined up around the house to pray, treating it more like a temple than the actual temple within the city. Even the local priests could not help themselves but bow in worship when they saw this. Yet through all of this, only one person had a different reaction. Within the house, Leowyn had a happy smile on her face, her tears falling freely.
"Stupid Mum, why'd you have to go and do that?" she asked,
a small laugh escaping her throat as she wiped away her tears.
"Aw, you didn't like it?"
Renan's voice appeared in her mind again, causing her smile to widen slightly.
"I loved it. Thanks."
Though she did know that she would have to leave the city now and take up that offer to live with the queen. The next day, Leowyn set out in the middle of the night, carrying only what she needed to make it to the capital. Although monsters sought to obstruct her travel, there were none capable of stopping her. Even among those at the pinnacle, she could be considered one of the strongest. After all, she had not only her levels, but the blessing which doubled her strength. The journey to the capital was the longest she had ever been outside of the city, as well as the farthest she had ever gone from home. Yet she did not feel like she was alone. Every night she spoke with her mother, just as she did with her father on her birthdays. When she arrived at the capital of Gandor, Cao Kalua, she found the queen already waiting for her outside the city gates. On either side of her stood a guard in full leather armor, the queen herself wearing an elegant dress.
"She said you were coming,"
the queen spoke, with a smile as she greeted Leowyn.
"Really, mother, you just don't know when to quit, huh?"
Leowyn thought internally, though couldn't bring herself to be upset over this.
"Thank you for meeting me, my queen,"
she said, as she approached. She wasn't sure what was going to happen from now on, but she knew that one chapter of her life was coming to a close, and another one soon to begin. Yet for her, she felt like she already knew the ending to her own story. Chapter 34. After joining the queen's court, Leowyn was offered a variety of jobs to choose from. No matter what her position was, the public couldn't so easily accept her living in the queen's castle, unless she actually did something. But that was just fine with her. Ever since she left Kaubunga, she knew exactly what she wanted to do. Leowyn became the queen's personal bodyguard. To test her qualifications, she was allowed to spar against the queen's current knights and guards. No matter who she fought, however, her strength proved enough to overpower any mortal enemy. It was to such a degree that she was granted a new title. From then on, Leowyn was known as the Goddess's Knight. Unfortunately, that title was rather empty without being able to receive the knight class, but nobody seemed to mind that fact much. After all, she was already as strong as she could be. Nobody dared to question that fact. As the queen's strongest knight, Leowyn openly volunteered for even the most dangerous of missions. Whether it was protecting the queen herself on an outing, or going to defeat a powerful monster roaming the lands, she always gave off an air of invincibility to those that knew about her. Granted, there were times when the church attempted to seize her for their own, now that her mother was no longer around. Those that did, however, learned that she was an even more monstrous existence than her mother. Without fail, the queen had them put to death after Leowyn dragged them before her. Only Leowyn herself knew why she was doing this. It wasn't for anything as special as proving herself to be the best of the best. No, part of her was looking forward to her failure. She was still living her life to the fullest, not wanting to leave any regrets behind, but she knew what she really wanted. As for her social life, it's not that she didn't try to have one. Whenever the situation arose, she would try to make friends. At one point, she even tried to find a suitor. However, those people she attempted to befriend all saw her as the daughter of Rian, or the knight of the goddess, not as Leowyn. Still, it was not as if she was unable to enjoy her life. With her role as the queen's guard, she was able to travel and see places that she had never seen before. She was able to fight exciting battles,
and feel the thrills that had always been denied her. Naturally, her father had asked her to stop such a dangerous life. He wanted her to live a long, fulfilling life, where she could enjoy any pleasures she wanted. However, that is not the kind of life she wanted. She did not want to live a modest life. No, she was Rian and Dale's little star. She would burn bright, let her glory shine upon the elves for generations. With all of her achievements, there was one that truly set her apart from the rest, a monster that was destroying nearby cities. This was a winged lizard that spouted fire from its mouth. From her mother, Leowyn knew it was a lesser dragon, one of the strongest monsters in existence. In terms of level, it was 250, a full 100 higher than anyone else. Along with many other knights, Leowyn had been chosen to bring the beast down. However, now she stood to face it alone. Her abilities had allowed her to last longer than her comrades under the breath of the dragon. "This is it," Leowyn thought to herself. "This is where I will shine." Her bow had long since turned to ash, her sword a pile of molten slag. Her body was charred black with burns, the only thing keeping her moving being the protection of her ki. In truth, it would not be hard for Leowyn to kill this dragon on her own. Though its scales were strong, they were not stronger than her fists, enhanced by ki. The problem was that the dragon never stopped flying. Rather than landing to confront her, it attacked in swooping motions, spraying down blue fire from its mouth. And as Leowyn watched, it was getting ready to do just that again. She saw it soaring high into the sky, before moving into a downward dive. "I am Leowyn Mardin, daughter of two gods. My father gave birth to this world, and my mother filled it with her magic and her love," she whispered to herself, urging her ki to spread through her body. Her silver hair had been scorched off her head, her mother's dress ashes at her feet. "Today, I will become a burning star for them." Her body seemed to almost glow as she spoke, looking up at the dragon that had opened its mouth. Her mouth curved up into a smile, no longer able to feel the pain of her burns. Leowyn crouched down briefly, before launching herself with her full strength into the air. The ground beneath her feet exploded, sending her flying upwards like an arrow shot from a bow. Her fists seemed to ignite as she clenched them. A dragon's roar could be heard, not from the beast above, but from the girl flying into it from below. She wasn't even aware of what she was doing, but in that moment, the image of a dragon superimposed itself over her fist. When she threw her fist forward to meet the flames of the dragon's breath, the golden image surrounding her fist opened its maw, swallowing whole the flames that sought to burn her. The dragon's flames seemed to hold no power over the key dragon that she had formed. And with its diving momentum, the lesser dragon was unable to stop itself from colliding with the projection itself, followed soon after by Leowyn's fist. A pained cry filled the sky as Leowyn's arm shattered under the force of her own punch. Yet the cry did not come from her, as blood gushed out of the dragon's head. Leowyn turned her body in midair by borrowing the force of the collision, bringing her leg high above her. That same golden light shined bright on her leg as she brought it down like an axe, severing scale, flesh, and bone. Using the power she did not understand, she had managed to split the dragon's head in two. However, there was a cost for such power, as her body had become incomparably weak. All of her ki had been used in the jump, as well as that first punch. As she fell towards the ground, even she did not know where she had drawn the energy for that last attack, or even what it was. All she knew was that she had done it. She had become a burning star in elven history, the woman who slayed the dragon. She watched the bar of her life slowly trickling down to nothing, emptying before she had even hit the ground. "Will you be waiting for me, father?" she asked herself as she closed her eyes, a gentle smile on her face. "Will you be proud of me?" I was dumbfounded, to say the least, as I watched Leowyn battling the dragon. The knights with her were all fairly normal, only in the lower hundreds for levels. After the first few rounds of dragon's breath, they had all died, with only Leowyn remaining. I had already prepared the screen to descend again to meet her,
when suddenly another notification appeared. Leowyn Marden has requested access to divine power. Do you wish to embody her with the powers of a Templar? You can do it, Leowyn, I thought to myself with a smile, as I accepted. Seeing her body begin to glow, I could feel the divine power coursing through her. I'm not sure how she had created the dragon key fist that she struck out with, but the kick she used afterwards had been filled with divine energy. At that moment, she had truly become an agent of the gods. With the battle over and both parties falling to the ground, I hit the button to descend. Leowyn opened her eyes, feeling the world around her changing. Looking down to herself, she saw her body returned to its normal condition. Her silver hair had returned, and even the dress that she had always worn was once again on her. If there was anything different, it was that she was slightly transparent and floating above the ground. "So, this is what it's like to be dead," she said to herself as she glanced at the charred husk that laid a few feet away from her, as well as the much larger body of the dragon that had fallen nearby. A satisfied grin floated on her face until she saw a ghostly form arising from it as well. "Oh, I didn't think about this part." She braced herself for another battle, ready to fight again, until a sharp shout caused the dragon's body to shake. "Get out of here," the voice commanded, and even Leowyn could feel her spirit shaking. As for the dragon, it glanced at the source of the noise in terror before turning and flying away as fast as it could. When Leowyn saw the figure that had chased away the dragon, she let out a gentle sigh. "I knew you'd be here," she said as she looked at her father. "I am, and I am proud of you." She could feel her ears redden as he said that. "Yes, I heard you. Now, I think you've been waiting for this." "Leowyn, do—" "Yes!" She didn't even let him finish as she ran up to her father, wrapping her arms around his slender frame and pulling him into the first hug she had ever been able to share with him, or at least she tried to, before falling through him. Realizing that he was not in the form of a spirit, her ears reddened again. Still, she gave her answer with all the determination she had been saving up for over a century. "Yes, please let me stay with you and Mother. I want to meet all of the gods and goddesses and watch the world grow with you. I want to see how you live and see all those other races Mother told me about." He seemed dazed by the sudden interruption and admission, but soon a small smile formed on his face. "All right, then I need you to not resist this," he told her, as he reached a hand out to her, gently stroking her cheek. Strangely, she could actually feel this. She could feel his power seeping into her, and hers being drawn into him. "Leowyn Marden, my daughter, do you wish to join me? This will only work properly if you give your consent now, and this is the last chance to turn back." "I do." She nodded her head immediately. When the words left her lips, she found herself being drawn into him. Her spirit merged with his, and she found herself living in a land of gray fog. At first, she thought that she had been sent to the afterlife, instead of taking her with him like he had said. But then, she felt the bond with him, that which had always been there, but stronger than ever before. When she closed her eyes, she could see out into the burning landscape that she had just been standing in. It did not take her long to figure out that she was looking through his eyes. "Father? Can you hear me?"
"I can."
She heard the voice from all around her. "Do you want to go ahead and meet Rian first?" No sooner had the question asked than she nodded her head emphatically.
"Please, let me see her again."
She could see a blue light shining in front of her father before the scenery changed. Soon she saw a wooden room, a wide bed decorated in a manner she had never seen with wide red silks. But more importantly, she saw her mother, Rian, sitting on the bed. She didn't even get the chance to ask before she felt a strange force pulling her from the gray world. Leowyn found herself standing between her father and mother. Her body was no longer transparent, but looked as if she was full of life. Without waiting for an explanation, she jumped forward, tackling her mother to the bed and wrapping her arms around her.
"I'm home," she said with a happy voice.
"Welcome home, Leowyn," she heard her mother say, her arms wrapping around Leowyn as well.
I'm so glad you chose to come back with him.
Chapter 35. I couldn't help but smile as I watched Leowen sitting on the bed next to Rian. So, how is it? Uncomfortable at all? She had just received her spirit body, so I wanted to make sure that there weren't any problems with it. Of course, it wasn't like I knew what to do if she did have a problem, but still. She glanced over to me with a gentle smile as she thought about it, before shaking her head.
No, everything feels fine. It's almost hard to believe that I died just now.
She glanced down to the floor, as if doing so would let her see her burnt body in the world below. She let out a deep breath, looking up at me as one hand gently held her mother's.
So, what do we do now? Is there some kind of ritual or something I should know about? Mum said that doing this wouldn't make me a goddess, but still.
I shook my head at her question.
No, nothing like that. If you'd like, you can go with Rian to meet the rest of the people up here. I'm sure that they'd all be happy to meet you.
Her face seemed to light up at those words, the idea of making friends who wouldn't care at all about her status. She nodded quickly after I made that offer, looking hopefully at Rian.
Please, Mom?
She pleaded, her silver eyes practically sparkling. Rian simply laughed, standing up and pulling Leowen along with her.
All right, all right. What will you be doing in the meanwhile, Dale?
Rian asked, curiously, before Leowen had the chance to drag her out of the room. I want to check on a few things in the world, see if there are any major improvements to note, I answered, moving to sit back down at the computer desk.
I'll be back soon, Father,
I heard Leowen calling to me, as her and Rian left the room, leaving me alone in it. I had a feeling that it would be a few hours, at least, before they came back. Plenty of time for me to look through the different areas to see if there was anything special. First, let's check on the Hirok. It's been a while since I paid special attention to them. A loud crash echoed through the dense jungle as a massive beast fell from a tree. On its head, a small hole could be seen, through which blood continuously leaked. The ground seemed to briefly shake as a green-skinned figure approached. On its slightly elongated head were three slanted eyes, the middle one wide open with a yellow glow on its pupil. The Hirok male nodded as he looked over his prey, feeling the energy within his body. Good. Still need work. His speech was rough, unrefined. The Hirok had only just developed a proper language, so it had yet to fully take hold for the older ones like him. Looking down at his hand, the glow within his eye faded gradually. He could feel various energies coursing through him. The Hirok was a warrior race, so it was only natural that their bodies were filled to the brim with ki, but even so many practiced mana as well. As for this man, he was different than most. His body had another energy that most were still unable to grasp. This was the energy offered to him by the gods for his devotion, a power which stood above all others.
The Templar has grown stronger.
An ancient voice rang in his ears, causing him to nod his head in satisfaction. This voice spoke to all of his people, but only when they earned it. As he was contemplating this, a loud screech filled the air, gathering his attention. With a grunt, the Hirok turned his head to find a giant ape hanging from a tree above him. He had just killed the ape's mate, so it was only reasonable that it would appear to get revenge. Stupid monkey, the Hirok spoke, and its middle eye again opened wide, beginning to glow with a golden light. In Sharok's name, die! As he spoke, the golden glow shot out from his eye like a spear, stabbing into the ape's head before it was able to respond. Like its mate, it fell lifelessly to the ground. The Hirok looked at the two fallen monsters before it, before casually grabbing a leg from each, turning and dragging them back to his encampment. He had never had a family of his own, and such there had never been anyone to name him. The first name he took was given to him by the mighty Sharok, the god who dwelled within the woods. It was a name whispered to none but himself. Templar returned to the tribe with the results of his hunt.
Well, that's interesting, I muttered slightly as I watched the Hirok.
Sharak was obviously not a real god, but at the same time it wasn't an actual Hirok either. From what I could tell after briefly glancing into the minds of a few Hiroks, it was something that they came up with, a personal deity that ruled the forest. The fact that this Hirok was able to unlock divine power by worshipping it was surprising. I mean, I always expected them to get clerics and templars more easily than other races due to not being bound to a single god. However, I had imagined that they would have to pray to the heavens for help, not the gods that they themselves create. Though, tracing the power back still led to the admin room. It's not like their belief actually created a god. That would be rather scary if it was possible. Just thinking about that made me shiver a bit. One thing did cross my mind, however. I received a prompt about letting Leowyn become a Templar. Do the gods receive something like that for all of them? Out of curiosity, I sent my question to Terra, the obvious target for such a thing. A moment later, her reply came back with a rather amused tone. We do get messages for letting anyone borrow our power, whether it is as a Templar, priest, cleric, or even a paladin. It all depends on which god the person worships. For the Hirok, each one goes to a majority vote, since they don't worship a particular god. And since I'm not actually a god, I don't have to vote for all of them. I was suddenly much more thankful that there weren't any people left that were able to view me as a god like Leowyn had. Part of me worried that the ninja village might do so, but there had been no sign of that so far. Speaking of which, I sent a glance towards the ninja village, wanting to see if anything interesting had taken place. What I found, I suppose it qualified. The ninjas were now spread out, well beyond just one city. That alone would not qualify as interesting, however. It was the arrangement of the cities that caught my eye. Each one was almost perfectly circular in shape, with wooden bridges connecting treetop buildings. From an aerial view, each one appeared to be a complex spell diagram. Like the elves, the ninjas had also discovered the existence of monster cores. This was evident by a shrine located in the center of each village, with an altar that had one such core embedded in it. If I had to guess, the shrine was meant to serve as a power source in an emergency, with the entire city activating the spell. Well, it looks like they didn't learn too much about wards yet, if they are taking that approach. Before I left to turn my view elsewhere, I saw something else in the ninja village that caught my eye. Someone had discovered another use for monster cores. I saw an alchemist grinding one into a fine dust before mixing it with the blood of a monster. When the process was done, he dipped a thin brush in the mixture, using it as ink to write on a parchment. This must be their next step in chakra research. Having seen enough, I turned to look at the dwarves. For them, their kingdoms had changed quite a lot from my last glance. Purely from size alone, the Iron Mountain dwarves possessed the largest and most powerful kingdom, spanning across several long mountain ranges. Like an anthill, they made their homes deep within the core of a mountain, mining out whatever they needed. Many of their mountains had the outward appearance of a volcano, due to the forges placed in the uppermost levels, and the ventilation tunnels which had been dug towards the mountain's peak. When I looked at those forges, I found that the hammers of many blacksmiths were no longer copper, and instead were using blackened iron. Some even had enchantments enhancing their usefulness. Of course, that was not the only area where the dwarves had advanced over these few hundred years. Arguably, more spectacular was their advancement in brewing. When I found one of their taverns, I even managed to see a guard who had hit the level cap drunk to the point of passing out. This showed that they had managed to create an extremely powerful drink. I was about to take a look at the centaurs and halflings when the door to my bedroom opened again. Turning to see who it was, I saw Leowyn with a wide grin on her face. To my surprise, she was no longer being escorted by Rian, and instead had found her way back on her own. "Did you already meet with everyone?" I asked, curiously. I wasn't sure how long I had been looking at those three races, but it didn't feel like long enough for her to meet and interact with everyone. "Mother asked everyone to meet us in the living room, so I saw them all together," she answered, as if having heard my thoughts.
I never thought that there would be so many people like her. Even though she explained it to me before, it is so hard to believe.
They didn't try to tease you or anything, did they?
Huh? No, they were wonderful, she exclaimed with an earnest smile. The little one, Rivi, she even asked if she could call me sister. I've never seen so many people who genuinely wanted to be friends before.
I couldn't help but chuckle at that.
You might have been a demigod to the people down there, but up here everyone is a god. To them, you're just another friendly face. That's the thing. I've always wanted something like that, she said with a wistful sigh, moving back to the bed and sprawling out on it. Everyone saw me as Rion's daughter, or the Queen's holy knight. Even the Queen herself mostly saw me that way, no matter how hard she tried not to.
I faintly nodded my head at her words.
Well, you won't have to worry about that here. I doubt anyone is going to worship you in this group. I felt myself chuckle as I said that, though she looked at me with a small grin.
Calliope kept trying to pull me into a duel, wanting to see how the demigoddess' strength held up. I was honestly a bit worried. If Behenna, right? If she didn't keep chasing her off, I might not have been able to get back as soon.
I was a bit surprised that Behenna would do that, but it wasn't really a bad thing. Leowyn slowly sat up in the bed, testing out its softness with her hands, before looking over at me.
So, when do we begin training? You let me come all the way up here, so I don't want to be useless after all of that, she asked, her expression suddenly turning serious.
With a sigh, I pulled out the glowing orb from my desk and tossed it at her. This has the training method for Aki Seppo inside of it. It'll be easier for you to understand if you absorb the information yourself. Just hold the orb and focus on what you want to learn. Although startled by the unexpected object tossed at her, Leowyn managed to catch it at the last moment, nearly fumbling and falling back in the bed. She glanced curiously at the sphere, before closing her eyes in focus.
Ouch!
Only a few moments later, she dropped the information sphere on the bed, bringing a hand up to her head.
Didn't know it would hurt like that. Try to take it a bit slow, I urged her. We're not lacking in time.
I wasn't expecting her to hurt herself by taking in too much information at once, but even I had gotten a headache when I did this. Once you've learned the methods to train the spirit, we'll get started.
Chapter 36 After Leowyn finished absorbing the information, I let her return to my spiritual realm so that she could begin practicing. This part of her training wasn't something she needed my help in, and was actually more effective if I was not involved with it. I let her know to inform me when she was done, and began looking over the world. It's grown quite well, hasn't it? I mused to myself, thinking about everything that had happened. However, there was still more to do yet, not only for this world, but I wanted to get a second one going before too long, now that I had an idea of what I was doing. Pulling out a paper, I began writing a message to Rion. I considered using the mental communication again, but there was the chance that might distract Leowyn. Is there anything you think we should get for the world? When I glanced at my points, I happily discovered that some more royalties and advancements had come in. By now, my points totaled at 1,975. Meaning I could essentially buy whatever I wanted for my world at this stage, within reason, of course. Unfortunately, it seemed like I didn't get any new special achievements, though in some ways that was a good thing. They didn't always give a beneficial effect, after all. Is she already training? I heard Rion ask from the doorway. When I glanced over, I could see her searching the room, likely looking for Leowyn. She said she was going to head back here for that. Or did she get lost? I chuckled lightly when I heard the second question. No, she's training the spirit techniques right now. So I take it you found something you want me to get, since you came here in person? Rion nodded her head slightly, moving over to sit on the bed. With a soft smile, she rubbed at the spot where her and Leowyn were sitting before. Right, there's a few things I have in mind. Honestly, the world is just advancing so much faster than I thought it would. By what Terra explained to us. Probably because all of you are actually helping your people,
I mused aloud, as I glanced at the map again. It had been around 2,000 or so years since the start of the world, yet they were already in the early Metal Ages. That's several times faster than what it was in my world.
Exactly. And